I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I find myself in Illinois, not in Sarasota, sitting at the dining room table of a friend, a long table, and next to me on either side, I have two other friends who are with me, and it's always nice to not be doing Faith Conversations via Skype, but doing it in person. So I have Karen Rivadeneira and Jennifer Grant. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Anita.
And the two of you are both authors, and right?
Yep. Yes.
Just affirm that I know what I'm talking about. That's all. And then, and I've known you as largely nonfiction authors, except Karen. You and I
said
wrote
that
a
novel
fiction
we wrote
book
together. But yeah, for sure.
Whoops. Somehow I had forgotten that. Okay. Shades of Mercy available now. Anyway, that's really funny, but largely nonfiction, right? And you too, Jennifer, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, but most recently, both of you have written a children's book.
Yes.
I'm so talkative this morning.
Again, just confirm what I'm saying.
Yes.
We have indeed.
We have indeed.
And actually, Jennifer, you and I recently talked about your book, When Did Everybody Else Get So Old? Mm-hmm. And in the midst of that podcast, I mentioned Maybe God Is Like That Too, which is your children's book.
That's right.
And I'm talking like it's the only one. You have many more in the works, I hear.
I have been working hard, yes.
And we're going to get into children's literature. We're going to talk about that today. Maybe God Is Like That Too. I told on the other podcast, it made me cry. I was reading this and I thought, this is a must read for parents and kids. And so I loved when I was raising my son, finding books and movies that didn't bore me to death. Because kids, they want to watch and read over and over and over. So to find something that you as a parent can connect with as well is tremendous. And Maybe God Is Like That Too is one of those books.
Oh, so. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So Karen, you have just written Grit and Grace, Heroic Women of the Bible. And so you decided to make the leap into children's literature as well.
I did. You know what? It started actually last summer or the spring before or something. I got an invitation. I know some folks at Spark House Family Publishing who are the people who did Grit and Grace. And the first two books actually I wrote for them were picture books. One was the story of Noah's Ark. The other, the story of Queen Esther. And even though we like to think specifically of the story of Noah's Ark as, you know, a great children's story, as I was writing that, I realized the difficulty of, this is a tough story, you know, but so that was kind of my entree into this. But then the idea of Grit and Grace, which follows, it's about, what did we decide? 19 different women in the Bible, their stories, 19 or 20.
And I should say, I'm glad you brought up the other two mm-hmm. books, which I did not mm-hmm. mention. This is your third children's book. And I wanted to go back and talk about age level. So Grit and Grace is for basically ages like 9 to 12.
Yes. So Grit and Grace is the first middle grade book, okay. which is a new, definitely a new thing for me, but it was very, very fun.
And what would you say Maybe God Is Like That Too is geared toward, Jennifer?
I would say 4 to 8. I think that's how they define that. Yeah.
Okay. So Grit and Grace, one of the things, I don't think I realized it was a middle grade book until I got it and realized how many chapters there were and that you went more in depth. But of course, absolutely loved the fact that this was specific to heroic women of the Bible. One of the things that I want to know is how did you decide which women to grab onto
and talk about? And it was really hard. And there are still a couple women I didn't write about that I feel kind of guilty a little bit. Yeah.
Like who?
Bathsheba comes to mind. She's not in here. Okay. And I have all sorts of reasons for not, I think, doing it, not having her. But there's other women too, you know, that I just come across and you go, oh man, I should have had her. But it was basically, I kind of did my favorites. And I have a lot of favorite women in the Bible. But I talk about in the introduction how when I was a little girl, my mom had bought me these little square books, and one was about Dorcas and the other about Naomi, and how I loved those little books mm-hmm. And how kind of faith changing they were for me. Just this realization of, we hear about the men of the Bible all the time. And that was me at 7 years old, like, oh wait, these women were pretty great and they were pretty important. And so I've sort of had these stories in the back of my head for a long time. And It was tricky. Eve was probably the trickiest one to put in there. We start with her. That was actually the first story I wrote. Because she's
what made her tricky to you?
Because she's Eve and she's viewed as the greatest villain of human history, right? Of the faith. And, okay. You know, she's the one who ruined everything, which she isn't. And I was casting her as a hero, which, you know, is maybe going to be theologically problematic for some people. But, you know, what's remarkable about her, you know, the more I spent time in her story is she was someone who experienced both, you know, the best experiences with God you could possibly have and probably the worst, the most terrifying. And even though we think of her as this horrible villain, she sinned and then she, you know, led to her Adam sinning and all this sort of stuff. Really, I think hers was, you know, a sin of curiosity, which is, I think, a sin of, for a lot of us, you know, and our curiosity is a God-given gift that, which is so important. It's like my favorite thing. I'm a very curious person and, you know, but there's good ways to live out our curiosity and bad. And but what I find remarkable is it was when you look forward to the story of Cain and Abel. And again, we look at that as just like, you know, this murderous, horrible story. But I kept thinking about like, but her sons were sacrificing to God. So here's a woman who'd been, you know, thrown out by and cursed and all these sort of things. But still she raised her children to honor God and love him and walk with him. And I'm like, that's pretty remarkable that in a way, she saved the faith. You know, I mean, she's the one who kept that going. Adam, too, certainly. But book's not about men.
Yeah, but we know the influence of women in the lives of children.
Yes. So
I'm sure it was no different then.
Totally. Right.
So, yeah, I love that. Yeah. I think, to me, one of the hardest things would be, and I'll get both of your take on this, writing to an age that we no longer are. I mean, I think that's really challenging. Was it, Jennifer?
Well, I think, and I've heard other people who write for children say this, but I think it's harder in some ways to write for children in that they, you know, when I'm writing a memoir or a longer piece for adults, you know, there's a, I understand that people sort of skim sometimes, or I know they jump around in a book and so on. Kids take language very seriously. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you know, kids love to hear things over and over again. So in some ways, when I was writing this book and the things I'm working on currently, I take every word really, really seriously. It's almost like writing a poem. And I wrote poems a lot when I was in college and sort of fancied myself a poet, although I think I wrote one good poem in my career as a poet. But in some ways, I use those same tools and those same skills when I'm writing for kids in that each word does matter. And I know that it will be read. You know, if I'm successful, it will be read over and over again. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much their age, but almost like the importance of choosing each word with care and each image with care, and not assuming that a page will be skipped or that they understand what I'm saying before I say it. So I kind of love it. I mean, it does kind of dust off some old tools that I've put away for a while in some ways.
And Karen, you might have kids closer to this particular age range, though. No, I don't know.
I do. Well, I have a daughter who just turned 13, so she just aged out.
But she can no longer read it.
No.
What did you find?
No, and that was certainly helpful. But I feel like there's something like we all were kids. You know, it's helping in being a kid who read. You know, and knowing what I liked. I feel like there's something sort of fun about tapping back into that. But I agree with what Jennifer said about the language and knowing that they'll be read out loud. I mean, I always read through my stuff out loud anyway in the editing process, but there is that extra importance of knowing that the way these words sound really matter. And but also just being able to have a little bit of fun with it. You know, adults take everything so, so seriously. And they were actually more the ones that I worry about, you know, when I'm retelling some of these stories and I'm thinking it's going to be the parents who are like, I don't know if it happened just like that. Kids are just, I think they understand. They understand that there's some stuff that, no, it's not straight from the Bible. I didn't know exactly what the weather was like that day or whatever. But kids will be okay with that. They take things kind of open-handed and understand and have some fun with it too.
You know, one of the things I was thinking as I was looking at Grit and Grace, I thought, everybody, buy this for your girls. And then I started thinking, wait, buy this for your boys.
Yep. You know, mm-hmm. talk about who you hope reads for sure. Well, and right. I mean, part of me, that was the same exact thing, that it's like, this book is so important for girls. And it is. It was really important for me as a little girl, right, to understand that and the Bible is tricky, especially whatever, throughout the whole thing. I mean, women were very, very oppressed.
Well, let me just interject into that. That's, you know, I don't know about the two of you, but I grew up in a stream of evangelicalism where women were, and sometimes still are, mm-hmm. oppressed, if mm-hmm. you will, or certainly not validated or silenced, elevated. Yeah. Silence, thank you. So, I mean, I think, I grew up not hearing mm-hmm. some of these tremendous stories of women of the Bible for whatever reason, whether, you know, a male pastor didn't feel like he wanted to talk about that story, the others were easier, but just heard so many more times male stories from Scripture.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think even among the best of pastors who mean well, it just, they tend to go to the man stories, and we hear the for good. I mean,
there's some
great ones, and I don't think we should avoid them. But I think it's really important for girls to understand that women have always had a very, very important role in the story of God and his people, and that God has always used women as leaders, as teachers, as mothers, as warriors, as preachers, as, you know, judges and prophets and all those things. The women are there. So, I mean, it's tricky because a lot of the, you know, the patriarchy of the Bible, you know, that'll be one of my questions for God of like, you know, you kind of told them these rules. And yet God, you know, he raises women up time and again. And I think that we do some other real disservices to these stories, though, too. I mean, Queen Esther is the classic example of how often it's told as this really fun beauty pageant that she was in. Wouldn't that be great, girls? You know, to have somebody come to your door and steal you away from your family and lock you in a castle and do your makeup? Yay! You know, like, we're not hearing what that really was. Right. It would have been an absolute terrifying nightmare, which is why Mordecai ran after her. You know, I mean, that just actually gets me all choked up. We were talking about crying before, but the idea that he ran after her, because he knew that this was a scary thing. But man, God used it. And she was so brave and so smart and yes, so beautiful. But that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the end of the story for her. So yes, important for girls, but of course important for boys to hear this too.
Yeah. The underserved population
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting. This Grit and Grace isn't quite out and available to the public yet. When does it come out?
August 15.
Okay, so pretty soon. I'm thinking, basically it is out.
It is out.
And maybe God is like that too, has been out for a little bit,
yeah,
a couple
of months.
Yeah,
it came out in February.
Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. All right, because I knew I had read that before getting Grit and Grace. Talk about one of the other reasons. Well, I want to talk about with both of you why, or if, rather, you think that there is an uptick in interest in children's literature. I personally do, but I'd like to hear from someone who's writing in this genre.
I don't know. I mean, I have always really enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed it reading to my kids, and also even before I sort of decided that I wanted to dig deeper into writing for children, I was still buying myself, you know, picture books. And, but I noticed a few years ago that it seemed like young adult literature was really, becoming more mainstream, and it was critiqued, obviously, like when John Green's Fault in Our Stars and some of those other books came out, a lot of adults wrote reviews or wrote about it, and that was, received in different ways. Some people mm-hmm. said, you know, oh, we're dumbing down our experience of literature because we're reading all these young adult books. Others, you know, said this is a way that adults are coming back into reading fiction. And so that was sort of mixed reviews over young adult literature and adults' interest in it. I think any reading is good for us. So if people are reading more young adult books or more middle grade books or more picture books, I'm for that. I'm, you know, I'm a book nerd. So, so I don't know. I mean, maybe there's more interest. Maybe people are kind of returning to the paper book after years of reading, you know, on their Kindles and so on. But like with picture books, which is what I'm focusing on, part of the experience is actually holding it in your hand and looking at the pictures and interacting with the text and the pictures together. So,
which I thank you for mentioning that, but that's an element that we've not talked about yet, is the picture side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just words on a page in either of these books. You know, pictures are a significant part as well. And I think they play a little bit different part depending on the age that you're targeting, but it's still significant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting as a writer to consider illustrations there as well, because then you don't have to write as much, you know, or the descriptions or whatever it is. You know, it's just very kind of a different mindset. Certainly with picture books, it's different. And there's always, you know, they can put in some fun or just silly little element or something that I just feel like adds the delight, or just can bring an added level of depth as well, which I think is actually really exciting. I mean, it's a totally new world for me, but...
Do you think there's a sort of a surge in children's literature currently?
I think there's always been great children's literature, and I hope...
Or maybe, you know, I think maybe it's a surge in the interest.
But I feel like it does seem like it to me. I feel like more people are interested. And I think you're right that the YA stuff, you know, even from Twilight or whatever, which I'll confess I read and enjoyed the whole series. Read it in about 20 minutes, you know, but whatever.
You're done on this podcast.
Can I still sit here?
Done.
You know what? Right. It was not like great literature or whatever, but it was a fun story and a good read. And yes, I have criticism of it and all those sort of legit things that are there, but
captured a few imaginations.
But on the flip side of the actual wonderful literature, you know, we were talking about not long ago, the book Wonder, which is now going to be a movie. That to me was one of the most profound books I've read it. I don't know how long. Like, I kind of compare everything to that book, and it was it's probably a middle grade book, but my third grader came home and his teacher was reading it to him, and he said, "Mom, we got to read this book. We got to read it." And he and I would read it together, and I would have to probably every 10 pages get up and leave the room to ugly cry.
Wow,
because
really?
It was so beautiful. Oh, it's such a beautiful book. And it's hilarious too. And it's all those good things. And it was interesting too, just to see the difference of how my son and I experienced the book. Because he was moved by it and touched by it, but not to tears, because he's not, you know, a mother of kids in school and like internalizing all that. He was kind of receiving it as a peer, you know, and stuff. But I think, you know, probably the more we read with our kids and to our kids, or see the influence that books have on them too, I think it helps kind of, spur that interest.
I'm trying to think. I think this was when John, my son, was in undergrad at U of I, and he brought home, I don't know the class, can't remember, but he brought home a graphic novel that was a part of the curriculum, what they were reading, and he said, "You've got to read this." And I still have it somewhere. I've read parts of it, but I fully understand the draw of that, especially that genre, I think, for his, well, in the millennials, especially. I mean, what's out there? It was a little bit harder for me to get into it, but I got it.
It's a pretty exciting, I think, genre, and it's very interesting to see the number of books continuing to come out. I don't think it's probably a flash in the pan.
No,
I mean, because it really has connected with people, this idea of sort of the modern comic book of sorts. But every month during the school year, I volunteer in the middle school library restocking books, which is a fascinating thing to do, to see what middle schoolers
are reading.
You get to see what their reports are on, you know, or what they're studying, but then also just the books they're choosing. And the graphic novels are popular, and I don't think it's because it's because they're easy and just pictures or whatever. I think
there's really fantastic content.
I can't think of the author. She wrote Smile and Drama and Ghost, but my daughter was very into those graphic novels.
Anything disturb you about what you've seen in restocking the shelves?
No. It's disturbing when you see maybe 6 months ago I was restocking a bunch of books on the Holocaust and knowing that they were doing that. So it's just, it's good and bad, but like there's something that happens in your heart when you go, oh yeah, kids need to learn about this and whatever, but not the fiction. I don't know. I'm whatever. But so it's more the nonfiction things that when you realize, oh yeah, they're learning about the horrors of the world.
Yeah. I want to know what happened for both of you in the context of writing your books, what happened in your own hearts? I mean, was it a faith-shaping kind of deal, or yeah, I'm curious about that.
Do you want me to?
Yeah, go ahead.
And even deciding, you know, I'm just looking at this too, Jennifer, we didn't talk to you about where the idea came from. Maybe God is like that too.
Well,
and that
actually,
might kind
editor,
of fold into this.
Yeah, the editor at Spark House actually asked me to write a book about the fruit of the Spirit, but it was a pretty open-ended assignment. So it could, you know, I could have gone a lot of different ways with it. And I did a little research on what other Fruit of the Spirit books were out for kids. And a lot of them, not to disparage my fellow writers who handle this topic, but a lot of them had the sort of typical like fruit bowl, apple, you know, banana, whatever. And I found that less intriguing. And I thought my kids, if I were picking this book up from the library, that would not have captured their attention or sort of helped them develop sort of a spiritual curiosity. So I spent some time trying to figure out like how, you know, it's such a big topic. How does God work? What is God's spirit like? And I liked the idea of instead of having kind of a sanitized fruit bowl, you know, where you're saying a banana is like joy or whatever. And sorry if that was someone's line from
with
their
a smile.
Book. With
I
a smile. Yeah, works. Exactly. I kind of pictured this, you know, it's a little bit more of a gritty or an urban landscape. And I think many wonderful books, whether or not they are written by people of faith, but it's wonderful when you find God in unexpected places. So that was sort of my idea of like where do we see God's spirit at work in a more urban or less, you know, sanitized place. And so this landscape kind of came to me. I thought it'd be interesting to have an atypical family. So this family in that book is a grandmother who's raising her grandson. And there, I don't mention why that is, you know, obviously there's been some loss in some way. You know, the woman's husband isn't there, the boy's parents are not there, and we don't know what happened to them. I mean, I sort of have a backstory on that, but it's not mentioned in the book. And then I thought, I also wanted to include people who had disabilities, and so there's a page that shows someone using a wheelchair. There's another page, and I asked the illustrator to try to include, you know, people who had different challenges. And there's one page where there's a boy using a cane who obviously is blind. And, you know, I just liked the idea of showing kind of not our typical suburban, you know, sidewalk and fruit bowl in looking at,
yes,
you know, where God's spirit is at work. And I love the way the illustrator, you know, I wrote a couple of little notes of what I hoped it would look like and what I hoped it would feel like. I liked the idea that it might feel like a book that I, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s would have picked up, you know, in a library. So it has that kind of like older, the color palette, the...
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I liked that idea of going a little retro with it and just doing something a little bit different, again, to sort of spark kids' curiosity about what is God like, and to ask more questions than to give answers.
So I flipped open a page and I saw one of the things that somehow made me cry, and I teared up again. It was where he didn't know how to tie his shoes and the teacher helped him. And so I didn't teach my kid to tie his shoes until he was 12. I used Velcro, sadly, but anyway, but it was the
shoe. He survived.
He did. It was a shoe salesman that said, "You're not leaving the store until you know how to tie your shoes."
Oh, wow.
And I was there with him feeling really good about my mothering, of course. But so that made me tear up for totally different reasons. But it also made me think of this. Okay. So I had read adult faith books, lots of them, especially my former job, you know, just inundated, constant diet of nonfiction. And, you know, and couldn't tell you the last time I had teared up. So one of the things came to me looking at both of these books, Grit and Grace, and maybe God is like that too. I think there are a whole lot of adult followers of Christ who are just sort of dead in the heart. meaning their faith has become stale. They are struggling to engage at all. The words on the page in the Bible itself have become, you know, one dimensional at best. You know, so my thought is that a great way to re-engage with God is to start again at the children's level. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea. No, and I say that with all seriousness, because I think, and increasingly too, you know, there's a lot of great material out there. There's a lot of great books right now. Mm-hmm. They're talking about faith things for kids. And I think increasingly, you know, and I think probably millennial parents have helped with this too. People don't want to be teaching their kids just, this is the rule, this is what it is.
Right.
You know, people, and I have felt this way, I'm not a millennial, but with my kids too, I want them to be curious about God. I want mm-hmm. them to ask the questions right. and wonder and struggle even. I know most people don't want their kids to struggle in faith, but I'd rather have that if it came out with a real faith. So I feel like it is a helpful exercise. I mean, Jennifer's book is a beautiful example and a beautiful reminder, you know, that doesn't take very long to read, you know, of mm-hmm. just looking
right.
for God. And I hope with Grit and Grace that it's a reminder, you know, through these stories, which are relatively short, of also kind of finding ourselves in the stories of these women of the Bible, you know, putting our, I wrote them each in first person. Each of them have a very distinct voice and kind of a different quote unquote writing style. But really the idea is that these women are very different from us. And yet not so different.
Not so much, yeah.
You know, and mm-hmm. I feel like that's a really important spiritual practice mm-hmm. to really think through these, look at these women like us. You know, I mean, the story of writing about Mary, the mother of Jesus. I mean, when I thought about her as a mother, a regular mom like me, I mean, she was not mm-hmm. regular, obviously chosen by God. Sorry. I didn't mean to elevate myself to the level of Mary. But regular mom feelings, right? She has those same yeah. fears, more of them, because she's been literally told this child, you know, you're going to get that spike through the heart
right.
feeling or whatever. But when you think about that and you bring all your own mm-hmm. emotions, and she would have felt this. I mean,
right.
it's mm-hmm. very difficult. And you see these stories in a whole different way rather than just reading them flat on the page.
Yeah. I love that in Grit and Grace, that the immediacy of the first person. And I loved also the fact that you wrote some of them. Some of them were like poems. Some of them mm-hmm. were like scripts. You know, some of them were like wonderful prose. I think, again, for kids, that varying the styles.
little thunder and lightning going on here.
We're having a bit of a storm.
Yes.
I think that will also, you know, to Anita's point about people who are feeling kind of unplugged from their faith or unplugged from mm-hmm. their spiritual curiosity, reading a book like Grit and Grace that kind of puts you in the heart and the mind of each of the women that is featured. And I cried in that book a couple of times as well, which I didn't expect to. You know, I was reading it, you know, to endorse it. And I kept finding myself in tears.
Well, and trust me, I have not been in tears yet, just because I've not read the whole book. guaranteed I will be, because of the fact that these are all stories about women, and that's mm-hmm. been a deficiency generally in my mm-hmm. upbringing in life, you know, mm-hmm. I would just say in my spiritual upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, I want to come back to you. You said something in your response to kind of re-engaging with God, reading children's and young adult literature, in fact, that all of these characters that you chose, the biblical characters, female characters, are written in a different voice. How hard is that as a writer?
It was really hard.
Is that challenging?
And it was, yeah, when I decided to do the book, initially I was going to write the book in third person, you know, so it would be she mm-hmm. said this, blah, blah. But actually, while I was writing the Eve story, I really wanted to hear it from her voice,
because
yes. I felt like that would be more interesting. And so I emailed my editor and I said, what would you think if I did this in first person? She was like, I don't know. Try. See how it goes.
So
just because
good.
She said that
so
that
good.
Was the problem. You know, it was just how do you make them each sound different?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I get that.
And so it was a little hard, but it was really fun because mm-hmm. it made me sort of go deeper into who they were. And right, like, so Deborah has this kind of rappy poem, which is hilarious. I told my 15-year-old son that I'm like, I think I'm going to have Deborah rap. And he's like, please don't.
Yeah, right. Please. Our His poor children.
Age, right, right.
He was horrified.
Exactly. No, but it's really just like
but kind of a poem. But they span so many different time periods. So I think that you handled that really well. Yeah. Like it, you know, each person is in a particular historical context. Mm-hmm. And so I think you, the way that you presented them and spoke from that, you know, you were able to, you know, make a different voice for each one because they were wildly different from each other, but also when they were living and their life circumstances were so different from each other.
And trying to take into account too their ages. I mean, some of them were very young, you know, writing about Miriam standing on the banks of the river. She was a little girl. So that's different.
Right.
So it was a little bit of a challenge, but very fun.
Yeah.
Something else that comes to my mind is the whole publishing scene of publishing children's literature, you know, versus other kinds of literature. And so my mind goes back, and Karen, you'll relate to this because you and I both worked together at Midday Connection in the past. And one of the favorite shows that we did, I would do it just once a year, but was, you know, how to get published or I don't know all that. But every year there would be questions that would come in about writing children's books and finding illustrators and all that. I never knew how to answer that. And we would have experts in the room as well. But you're now on the other side of that. Have you thought of some of those people asking that question? And you probably know a whole lot more now.
I have. And I get the question, Jennifer, I'm sure you do too. I mean, all the time now, because it seems like children's literature is an area a lot of people want to get into. Some people think it's
easier.
They think it's easy.
I guarantee they think
that. Totally, because it's easy and it's fun and all you have to do is
And you're here, both of you, to say
No.
Oh, no.
No.
Right. I knew the answer, but I just needed to say it.
No.
No, it's not easier. It's not easier to do it well. But it's, and what I'm finding is interesting is
thanks for that addition, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not easier, to do it
to
well.
To do it well.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yes. It's very easy to write, you know, quick 500 words that sound terrible or whatever. Yeah. But the children's publishing world is very different than the grown-up publishing world. And I had, you know, like Jennifer, I had spent my entire career, you know, in magazines and publishing. And I know a lot of people in the grown-up publishing industry, and I feel very well-versed in that. Even as I've started to delve into explore and, you know, now talking to other publishers and all that's very exciting. But you realize this is a very different world. And a lot of the people who work, you know, in, I keep calling it grown up because adult publishing sounds bad, grown up publishing, they won't even go there. They're like, I don't know anything about children's publishing. It's viewed as like this very different, mysterious animal. So it has been very interesting to step into it. But I think, you know, for people who are interested in it and who really have that desire, it's a worthwhile thing to really get great at. And the kind of general rules are when you're looking for either an agent or a publisher, you know, you don't, if it's a picture book and you're a writer, you write it. Don't find your own illustrator.
Oh, that's
that,
a good
that
question,
should happen.
That question
later.
Always came up.
Yeah.
Do you leave that to the publisher or do you get say
I think
in
they
that,
prefer
or?
That. I think that unless you're a brilliant artist that,
yourself.
Exactly. Okay. Right.
And I think it's important too to say that just like any writing, it's about the craft. So, we just recently spoke at a conference about, children's literature, and a number of people stayed after and, you know, said, I have an idea. I want to write a book, blah, blah, blah. And I gave them sort of the same advice that I give to, you know, adults who want to write a memoir or a piece of nonfiction or a novel or whatever, which is just to really hone their craft. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one of the downsides to self-publishing and the ease with which we can publish anything is that, you know, people can in 5 minutes, you know, upload to Amazon or whatever their own drawings or their own picture book or their own memoir. And there's a reason why, you know, publishing in a traditional way takes a lot of time, and there are a number of gatekeepers at every turn and editors who, you know, kind of rake you over the coals about what you're doing. And what that does is it does serve the work itself. And so I encourage people, if they're interested in writing for children, take it very, very seriously and don't just, you know, have your one-off book, but really delve into, you know, what makes a great work for children and what makes a good work of literature, whether it's for children or not. But yeah, I think it's tempting, like, to see a picture book and go, oh, I could do that. And, you know, I'll do that in a second and I can whip it off and draw my own pictures and whatever. But actually publishers do have illustrators with whom they work, and there's, and that's its own craft as well. I mean, that's not, you know, in, I was so impressed with the illustrator who did Maybe God Is Like That Too, who picked up on little verbal cues and made funny little, you know, visual references that, that add so much to the story itself.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, that the people who think it's easy or fun or like they have a message that they need to tell kids, that's something that I worry about a lot too. Kids don't need us to write books with just some message.
Yeah. And they don't worry need about to be... that in all genres.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But yes, I think especially
that
Proud
a great
kids.
Story is really, I mean, we can have things in our heart we want them to experience. Of course, everyone has that, but and that it's not, you're not writing down to anyone. You know, kids are really smart. Yes. Little kids, when they hear things and read things, they know how to process and they know what they're hearing and they see through, you know, garbage too. So it's not, it
they
really
see
to respect
better
that,
than many adults.
Totally.
Actually,
I mean, so, to really respect that craft, Jennifer, I think is huge. Hone it and learn about it.
Yeah. So Karen, I know you mentioned the other two children's books that you've written before Grit and Grace. Say the names again, because well, a couple things. Number one, brief commercial break here. So I'll post all this on my homepage at anitalustria.com if you're driving or out jogging, whatever. I know you can't write all this down, so most people know to go there. And also the podcast is listener supported. Thank you so much. Some dear people that continue to support the podcast. You can do that on PayPal. You can give that way, and the PayPal address is producer@anitalustria.com, and you can mail a check too. Some of you prefer to do that, and the address is 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237, and Anita Lustria, you know that. But I will post all the information at anitalustria.com, but say the names of your first two children's
okay,
books.
Okay, so The Story of Noah's Ark, which is available. That's a hardcover. The Story of Queen Esther is actually just an ebook at this point. And they're available through Sparkhouse Family. And then Grit and Grace,
which is out now.
Jennifer,
you know, you told us that Maybe God Is Like That Too is out. We know that, and I've talked with you briefly about it when we talked about your other adult nonfiction book. What are you working on now? Are you working on it? I think you even said you're working on other children's ideas. Are they just up here in the sky, or are you actively?
Well, they've come closer to Earth.
Okay. Very good.
They're more on my desk now. One is a book that is about grief for children. And and so that one is I've written a few drafts of it, and it's about a little girl whose next door neighbor dies. And so I was trying to kind of approach grief in a way that would be authentic, but also that like parents could bring this book to children. And it's one step removed, you know, it's not a parent, it's not a sibling, but that book is sort of in the works. And then, I'm also working on some other ideas with Sparkhouse, which, you know, we'll see where they go. But I'm really interested in writing about in Psalms. I contributed to a book about the Psalm, or I mean, it's a Sparkhouse release as well. But it's I think there were maybe five or six contributors to this book, and it actually just won a prize from, and I won't remember what wonderful organization.
Yeah,
but I
saw that as well.
What's the name of the book, first of all?
Karen, you could also Google what prize it received. But basically all the contributors were given five or six psalms to kind of reinterpret and to write as sort of prosy poems for young children. And I loved doing that. It was so much fun, and it was, again, like every word counts, right, in an assignment like that. But that got me interested in sort of maybe looking at doing a book that would be covering one psalm at a time, rather than a book of all these different psalms, just to kind of tell those stories, kind of capture or reinterpret the images that are there mm-hmm. for children. So I'm interested in that. I'm also interested in my new book for adults. I ended up...
Title.
Oh, When Did Everybody Else Get So Old?
Thank you.
I talked a lot, and I didn't expect to. So when I was looking at the galleys, I was really surprised by the frequency with which the book of Ecclesiastes came up.
Interesting.
And okay. I thought it would be interesting to kind of... I don't think we really talk to children about Ecclesiastes. You know, it's sort of like...
I don't think we talk to adults about Ecclesiastes,
that's right. Jennifer. That's right. Well, I really fell in love over the last few years.
I quote a specific quote from Ecclesiastes all the time.
Oh, do you? What is it?
The rain falls on the just and the unjust. Mm. Because I feel like we have just a horrible theology of, you know, I've accepted Jesus.
Right.
And now everything's smooth sailing.
Right.
Lie.
Right. Yeah. That's
like,
right.
No, that's
right.
That's bad, horrible theology. So,
well, anyway. there's something kind of beautiful and kind of detached about that book of the Bible. Like it's really about, and actually in the, I think it's in the introduction to When Did Everybody Else Get So Old? I kind of capture a conversation that Karin and I had about the book of Ecclesiastes and how it's really about letting go and trust, you know, and kind of trusting God that, you know, did you just...
I'm laughing because the book is called Psalm Book. And think that would be able to be...
Yeah. The book I contributed to from Sparkhouse on the Psalms is Psalm Book. Yeah. And, and I think it's a wonderful retelling of some of the Psalms. I'm not only speaking of... I mean, there were several contributors to that.
Michelle Van Loon,
Michelle Van Loon. Nice. Okay. Yeah. And a number of others. But anyway, so I like the idea. I'm also really taken with the book of Isaiah. A few years ago, I was the co-editor and a contributor to the book Disquiet Time. Mm-hmm. And that book actually affected me more than almost anything I've written or read, really, because there were like 40-some contributors. In terms of kind of getting me interested in studying the Bible in a way that I have never felt. So we had all these my co-editor and friend, Kathleen Falsani, and I invited 40-some people to say what they love or hate or what they're embarrassed is in the Bible. And what we got was this incredibly fresh sort of group of voices of people who have, some of whom are you know, pastors or authors, others are artists or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And everyone sort of came clean about what they either really love about the Bible or don't love about the Bible. Mm-hmm. And they each chose a verse or a passage and wrote these very personal, confessional sort of essays about how they interact with it. And that book got me really, I'm playing with the idea actually of getting more schooling, you know, in studying the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, which I always sort of like brush off as like, oh, well, you know, that's full of so many weird stories and that's the old whatever. But I particularly fell in love with the book of Isaiah. So I would love to write about Isaiah for kids as well. So
nice.
These are all sort of, you know, orbiting ideas, but...
Karin, what about for you? I know Grit and Grace is, you know, fresh, brand new, but what are you thinking about in the future?
Yeah, I've got some other things. And it's exciting, too, because I'm in one of the, I just feel really blessed that there's some other opportunities coming mm-hmm. up, too, to develop some ideas with different people. But I have a couple of books, too, that I've written that isn't really, it's funny, it's called Franken School, and it's a silly little book that's based on a mishap when, again, my youngest son came home from school. You know how you can buy, sometimes there's authors who come and visit schools?
Yes.
So my youngest name is Frederick, and we had pre-ordered the book and asked that it be inscribed to Frederick. And he came home with it, and it was inscribed to Frank. And he was so mad. And I was, like, laughing. Frank, like, how does this happen? And so it just developed this whole idea. And we started joking and telling these stories to each other. What if you're really Frank in school? What if that's it or whatever? And so it started out as a very silly little story, but in kind of a... I don't know. I challenged myself. I wasn't working on any other projects to develop this story. And I really like what it's become.
Well, and of course, I heard you say it, and I'm thinking Frankenstein.
Right. Yes. So that's it's sort of a play on that. Yeah. And it's so it's a silly, weird book that as I was writing it, it's like, this has nothing to do with faith or God or anything. And I looked back and I was like, oh my goodness, this book has everything to do with faith. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't come out and say it, but it's a book about imagination and grace and all these things. So we'll see.
Honestly doesn't, but it's everything. So
it does. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's sort of so funny, but so we'll see. That it's a strange enough book that it needs to find the right home. But yeah, and then I've got a couple other ideas. Another middle grade sort of novel that I've been working on slowly for a long time. Some of it, you know, it's hard, I think, when you're diving into new territory. And I've been a professional writer for 20 some years now. And I, you know, if you were to ask me right now to write an essay on something or an op-ed, you know, whatever, I could
crank it out
and I'd feel super confident. It's interesting as you start exploring new areas and, mm-hmm. you know, like Jennifer was saying, because you realize limitations a little bit and saying, okay, I need to go back and I need to make sure I'm doing this well and that I know that this is going in the right direction. And but it's pretty exciting.
Nice. Yeah. Anything either of you are burning to say before we close things off? Just got to get it in there. I've not asked the right question yet.
No, you've asked wonderful questions. I think I would reiterate the what we all talked about earlier, which is that writing for kids is a really serious pursuit, you know, and it's something that, you know, when we look at all the classic, I'm thinking about, you know, picture books because that's what I've been focusing on. But you think about the, you know, Where the Wild Things Are or other books that we grew up with and loved and that informed our kids and informed our own imaginations and helped us express as kids emotions that maybe were hard to articulate, helped us develop curiosity about how people work together, how anger, what is joy, all those things. So I think it's a very, you know, I feel like it's a real sort of privilege and it's a responsibility to take it very seriously. And, you know, regardless of what the topic is or the theme, that it's not something to think you can just whip off a book. And I am getting more email from writers who say, yeah, I'm going to write children's books too. And, you know, I've got an idea about my cat or whatever, which is fine. But I think people should approach these projects with the level of sort of seriousness and integrity that we approach other writing projects.
Yeah, good word.
Yeah, I totally agree with you that, and I think on that, and I think even in the silliest books, you know, I think there is that huge responsibility, and like you're saying, because of how formational they are. You know, even if it is helping kids identify the silly in life and learning to laugh at things,
right.
Or just the beauty in words and language and all that stuff. You know, writers talk about all that time about, you know, falling in love with words and all that. But it's important, you know, and it's important even for kids who aren't writers, just realizing that stories have tremendous power. But I would also really encourage, I love that you brought this up earlier, Anita, is for grownups to revisit, whether you're reading to a kid or not. I mean, go to a bookstore, pick up some of these. There's some amazing work being done that's really surprisingly significant. I mean, I experience it all the time with my kids. You know, you're reading some book and it's just silly and the pictures are great, and by the end you're like, oh my goodness, that was amazing.
I have a friend who has a stack of children's books a foot high and her kids are closing in on 30, you know, so it's been a real great thing for her, and she's sort of got me back into it too, so Well, thank you to both of you, Jennifer and Karen. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, that's it for Faith Conversations.